rally in Washington, D.C., where, for example, there was a man standing at the back of the rally holding a huge billboard-sized sign that said, you can't end abortion if women can still get away with murder. Now, this is related to the abortion abolition movement, to a group that's gaining power by saying you need to criminalize women and put them in jail for abortions. This is the fringe now, but we've seen over time that in the anti-abortion movement, the fringe has become the center. So I would keep an eye on these growing efforts to punish people who have abortions and who self-manage their abortions.
Amy Littlefield, abortion access correspondent at The Nation. Amy, we're going to continue the conversation after I'm posted at democracynow.org. Happy birthday to Karen Ranucci. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Pathways, a show featuring conversations with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. Join me, host Paul O'Brien, or my co-host Donald Altman every Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. You can find out more about the show or listen to the program archive at kboo.fm/pathways.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and you're listening to KBOO in Portland.
And good morning. This is Cecil Prescott, and you are continuing to listen to KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. We are broadcasting live on this date, the 26th of June, 2023, and we are broadcasting live 8 a.m. in the morning, Pacific time, Pacific daylight time. So wherever you are in this vast metaverse, you're at the right place at the right time. Thank you so much for listening and being a part of our conversation this morning. And as I mentioned, today is the 26th of June, and we are returning to broadcasting after, I think, a couple of weeks. I know I've been away for a couple of weeks, and last week was a holiday, and we're going to talk more about that a little bit later on as the program continues. Let me just give you our phone numbers for you to give us a call a little bit later on, 503-231-8187. That will be the number that you call us when we say, give us a call.
When we say, give us a call, those are the digits.
How are you this morning?
I'm enjoying the sunshine.
It's sunshine.
Oh, somebody's popular. They're getting text messages back. I want to be popular in the morning. No, I don't. Let me take that back. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
Be careful what you ask for. Hey, you know, that's a segue. You know, I'm always trying to figure it out.
Okay.
So, but maybe the question is, did we really ask for it? So I'm going to give you that teaser and cliffhanger while I announce that you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area. In the Gorge, it's 91.9. In the Willamette River Valley, like in Philomath, it is 104.3. And everywhere in the world, KBOO.fm. Welcome, everyone, to More Talk Radio. So, Cecil, to get back to my segue, many people who through the generations have been celebrating Juneteenth did want wider recognition of the holiday, of the spirit behind the holiday. And there were some people that decided, well, that wider recognition must be in the form of a national holiday, right? And we talked some about this, I think it was probably in 2020 and probably again in 2021, about the perils of Juneteenth being celebrated widely. There not being a lot of clear information for some people on what the nature of the holiday is and why it is viewed by many Americans of African descent as Freedom Day. Okay, but, you know, anything that gets wide acceptance then becomes subject to not only the court of public opinion, but sometimes you have people who are vehemently against it because they don't understand it. And then you have commercialization, you have appropriation, you have et cetera, et cetera. But I can say the very same thing in many ways about that for the 4th of July. You know, there are a lot of people who are extremely upset by the commercialization and even commodification of the 4th of July. Certainly. And I know that you wanted to compare and kind of contrast the values that they have, but I want to throw a little something in the mix too. So I wait though, because I think mine is more, my statements might be a little bit more controversial or volatile.
Well, thank you, Celeste, and we'll see about how controversial your statements may be. I wanted not so much to talk about the contrast between the two holidays, but to reflect some personally, and also to ask the listeners for their thoughts and their opinions. Certainly, Juneteenth, as you mentioned, Celeste, has recently been acknowledged and celebrated as a federal holiday, the first federal holiday in almost 40 years that has been recognized. Part of the contrast, the dilemma that you hinted at, is what do you do with this new national holiday? Those of you who are older might remember the constant discussion, the debates before the last federal holiday was declared in 1983 by Ronald Reagan when it was signed into law, and that was the Martin Luther King Day. At that time, there was a debate, a discussion within the movement, particularly about how to recognize Martin Luther King Day. And there was movement and support from the family and people within the movement to focus on Martin Luther King Day as a day of service, a day of action in which you not only remember the movement and the legacy of Martin Luther King, but you engage in action to continue the work and legacy of Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement. So therefore, the emphasis has been on Martin Luther King Day as a day of service, and you see throughout the communities, various activities by community groups, whether it is, you know, picking up litter, tutoring kids, a vast range of activity to emphasize a day of service. In contrast, as Celeste hinted at, the evolution of Juneteenth is something that has generated from the ground up, most just like MLK, but in a different manifestation. Juneteenth was a celebration that started from descendants of those who have been enslaved, beginning in Texas and taking its roots from there and manifesting itself in many different communities throughout the Southwest and eventually throughout the nation. And so the question has been, when Juneteenth became a national holiday, how to recognize it? Well, there has been two contrasting viewpoints on it. One is it should be like a day of service. We shouldn't. And another viewpoint that has been advocated by some, and I'm referencing Dr. Jamal Tisby, who wrote The Color of Compromise, a book that came out about 4 or 5 years ago, has written extensively, particularly on religion and the black experience and evangelical influence. Dr. Tisby has been advocating for Juneteenth, and I know this as well, not to be not only commercialized, as Celeste talked about, and not to have you, well, not to be commercialized, but to have it be actually a day off. You know, it's a freedom day. It's a day in which we recognize freedom. And so
freedom.
Black people do not need another day to work. It needs a day. We need a day to relax, to party, to barbecue, to enjoy family. And so, you know, the emphasis is, you know, Freedom Day, Juneteenth should be a day off. Not a day work, a day off. So we'll see what happens, how it will evolve. Huh. All of this, just to set up that Juneteenth and the 4th of July and other holidays is a time of heavy reflection and debate for many people. W.E.B. Du Bois first published an article in 1897 in the Atlantic magazine, which was revised a few years later in the Book of Essays, The Souls of Black Folks, in which W.E.B. Du Bois talk about the conflict within the souls of Black Americans in terms of their relationship to the nations and to the ideals of freedom and liberation. And for me, as a young Black boy growing up in New York, that contrasting viewpoint of the United States and our roles in it played out in my life. I remember as a young boy, it was my duty to stand up on the roof of our house and put up the flag for Memorial Day, Independence Day, Veterans Day. I was very much involved in celebrating, and it was my vaunted duty to raise the flag on our house. Now, this might have come from my parents and those influence and the role that they played not only in being participants in the national preparation for war in the Korean and World War II, but also the ongoing struggle of Black Americans, do we belong? So I remember standing up strongly and proudly, putting up the flag. Now, I was a Boy Scout patrol leader, and you know, it was a Boy Scout duty to honor the flag and know how to fold the flag and do it all just right. But, you know, contrasting with, for me, was I was not only wanting to struggle to be a good, loyal American, but also there was within me that cries for liberation and freedom. And so although I was a Boy Scout patrol leader, we call our patrol, and they were normally named after some sort of animal or something related to forestry. Our patrol was called the Panthers. Now, not so much because of the Panthers, mm-hmm. but because at that point in time, the Panthers symbolized, for those of us in the cities, the liberation struggle of Black people. So mm-hmm. the Black Panthers were in honor, not for the animal, but for the movement. And it was so much so that, you know, am I an American or am I a Black American? And what is my relationship to that? I'll pause now because I want to read it, the essay, a portion of the essay from The Strivings of Negro People, which I think is so insightful. The fact that it was written over 125 years ago and still has relevance today in terms of the contrast thing, feeling towards the American ideals that many of us have. We can say more a little bit later on, but I'll pause now so I can get let you say something, Celeste, or maybe some of our callers.
Well, first what I'll do is give the phone number again, 503-231-8187. And I would rather wait and let you finish this, to get that complete thought out and add to the texture of our conversation today. So I'm holding off. Go right ahead and finish that article.
Okay. So in August 1897, W.B. Du Bois, at the age of, was not quite yet 30, wrote for the Atlantic magazine. W.B. Du Bois had studied extensively in Germany and the United States. He was the first African American to earn a doctorate at Harvard University. Later became a professor of sociology, economics, and history at Atlanta University. Was one of the founders of the NAACP and was an activist throughout his life in terms of advocating for the freedom of black people. So in the article he wrote called The Striving of the Negro People in the Atlantic Magazine in 1897, he wrote in part these words. After the Egyptian and Indian, the Greek and Roman, the Teutons and the Mongolian, the Negro is a sort of seventh son born with a veil and gifted with a second sight in this American world. And I'm using the language that Mr. Du Bois used, so be aware of that, and in terms of not being gender expansive language. Continuing, he writes, the Negro is a sort of a seventh son born with a veil and gifted with a second sight in this American world, a world which yields him no self-consciousness, but only lets him see himself through the revelation of the other world. It is a peculiar sensation, this double consciousness, this sense of always looking at oneself through the eyes of others, of measuring one's soul by the tape of the world that looks on in amused contempt and pity. One feels his two-ness, an American, a Negro. Two souls, two thoughts, two unreconciled strivings, two warring ideals in one dark body, whose dogged strength alone keeps it from being torn asunder. The history of the American Negro is the history of this strife, this longing to attain self-conscious manhood, to merge his double self into a better and truer self. In this merging, he wishes neither of the older selves to be lost. He does not wish to Africanize America, for America has too much to teach the world and Africa. He does not wish to bleach his Negro blood in a flood of white Americanisms, for he believes, foolishly perhaps, but fervently, that Negro blood has yet a message for the world. He simply wishes to make it possible for a man to be both a Negro and an American, without being cursed and spit upon by his fellows, without losing the opportunity of self-development. W.E.B. Du Bois, 1897, in the Atlantic Magazine, The Striving of the Negro People. So, Celeste, I ask, should I put up the flag on the 4th of July or not?
Well, that depends on what flag you mean. Now, you know, given that, you might put up the American flag that has been birthed out of the consciousness of black Americans back in, I want to say, the middle to late 1990s, where you had the stripes and stars, but the color base was different. Mm-hmm. You remember that one?
All
right. So before we get off, though, and into that perspective, let's open our phone lines and talk with Corey. Thank you for holding. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say I still listen to y'all from Seattle, Washington. I was born in Galveston, Texas. So maybe growing up in the South, growing up in Texas, Juneteenth was always, I think, at least a state holiday. Like, I grew up with Juneteenth. So when I moved to the Pacific Northwest, I think when I lived in Portland for 6 years. I remember they used to have things like off of Alberta, and even here in Seattle, they would have little things. But I guess to see it as a state holiday, I mean, a federal holiday now is a good thing, but it's also sort of good and bad, because I think that Galveston itself, Galveston, Texas, the black population has dwindled. And that goes to just the point about how, you know, you gave us, you know, they gave, we have a federal holiday, but systemic issues are still present. Like, yeah, that's yes. great. We have a holiday, but mm-hmm. the population of Galveston is pretty much being decimated of black people. Just through gentrification, and Galveston itself is an island, you know, kind of southwest, southeast of Houston, which, yeah, it's a nice place, you know. But you can see the gentrification. My sister works there. She works at the University of Texas, so you can see that happening. So mm-hmm. cool that we got a holiday, but what about the systemic issues going on? Like, it almost seems like, yeah, here we go again, like something that right. we didn't all ask for, but we're not really getting to the root of the issue. As far as July 4th, I think I've called before. I'm a veteran. It's nothing that I celebrate. As a matter of fact, because I have an animal, it's pretty much the day that the dog hides under the bed, and I just close the door and put the fan on.
Yep, yes.
He's afraid of the fireworks, and I think that, you know, it's just, even going to Blazers games back in the day, I would, you know, go there. They play the Star Spangled Banner, and I'm like, well, wait a minute, the song itself is racist, and yet...
Yes.
Got it. And also, the final part about Juneteenth, I just want to... I think even though that there's a lot of myths about Galveston, after Galveston, there were still places in Missouri, West Virginia, Kentucky, where there was still slavery. So I think there has been some pushback about just the facts versus the myth of Juneteenth. Because I think even after, you know, like I remember growing up in Texas, there was a picture, I forget the general's name, he's standing on top of a General Gordon Granger.
Right, yes.
The state house, and that never happened. I think it was just spread through word of mouth and spread through the churches that, you know, there's no more slavery. But even with that language, it wasn't like, hey, you're free. It was like, hey, you're free, but you're not supposed to leave. You're supposed to be given wages now. So,
right.
I think,
you know, breaking through the myths and, you know, a popular myth is sort of like, you know, they did not know they were free until this general came and stood in the town hall and gave them free. Well, you know,
there might have been a few pockets, but
people knew, and it was not it was a myth of a power resisting. You know, they did not want releasing power. So it's not that people didn't know they were free, it was that they were unable to exercise their freedom. And as you suggest, that continued resistance continued throughout the United States. And in fact, slavery continued by the amendments that were introduced at the end of 1865.
Exactly. And I appreciate that. And I just, like I said, this is I love this conversation. I just love listening to y'all. I love the conversation. But it's also interesting being in the Pacific Northwest, having grown up in the South when it is Juneteenth. People look at me to barbecue. I'm like, well, come on now, just because I'm from Texas.
Well, they're assuming a level of skill that comes from Texas. You know what that is. It's kind of like a compliment, but a backhanded compliment, because you're supposed to work.
And I give them the side out, like, I'm especially not working on this day, but thank y'all so much, and I'll talk to y'all later.
Thanks for calling, Corey. And you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland. 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in Hood River, Oregon, and Philomath, Oregon. It is 104.3 on the web, www.kboo. I'm here with my co-host Cecil. I am Celeste, and you can give us a call, 231-8187. Yes. 2 weeks off and you don't know what number it is. And give us a call. And we have next James. Good morning, James.
Good morning. The American Constitution ended slavery. It was socialists in the political class that kept slavery going.
We're not talking about slavery. Go ahead, Cecil.
I just wanted to clarify. socialist in a political class. So you mean socialist in 1865, which defined socialism, and what does that mean?
Socialism is slavery to the state.
I mean, no. I want you to be a little bit more specific. You're throwing this term around, socialism. What does it mean to you? It's a political ideology. What does that mean to you? And you're intelligent enough to know that socialism, as defined by Marx, Engels in 1848, was different than state socialism in the Soviet Union and in communist China in the early 20th and mid 20th century. So what is the socialism that you all are speaking against? What is it that you're speaking against?
Socialism is public control of the means of production, which is another word for state control of the means of production.
And so this was, you mentioned that it was in, so this was something that happened in 1865, or are you talking about something that happened? Who are the socialists you're referring to specifically?
I am talking about socialism as a faction that was created by the ruling class and used to divide the American people and enable said imperialists to enslave the American people.
Okay, but I want you to just... I want you just to...
James, do you want to have a conversation or a diatribe? Which one today?
I just want you to define what you mean by slavery, what you mean by socialism, instead of just throwing out these words. I don't know what you're saying, so I want you to explain what it is by the ruling class. Who are these people and what control they have over other people?
Well, let's talk about liberty first. What is a free market? A free market is
okay,
where...
Okay, James, I'm going to have to stop you here. This is nowhere near the topic. We love to hear from you, but it's not helpful when you're off topic. We're talking about the spirit behind Juneteenth.
You were talking about how America is not
inclusive. I was not.
Yes, you were.
Okay.
That it doesn't include black people, and that's wrong.
Okay.
Doesn't include black people.
Okay. Look, I'm not going to argue with you. I do know what I said. I do know what Cecil said. We did talk before we started the show. So we're talking about some of the conflict, be it internal or communal, the conflict of serving, you know, dual identities, which are being forced upon us by the fact that this society creates a state of otherness. Okay, we're talking about how this whole idea of celebrating this holiday really brings that to the surface. That's what we're talking about, and we would like you to join in that conversation.
Well.
Instead of enforcing your view on us and telling us what we're talking about.
Well, what I'm trying to do is include, to make you feel that you are included in America and not...
You can't do that by... You can't
have the view that you are separate.
You can't do that, especially by doing that to us. See, you let me just break it down to you. You're trying to tell us that you can make sure we know we're included. That's not the issue. And then as a white man, what you're doing is the very thing that is symbolically representative of the whole concept of freedom in Juneteenth. And you're missing that point, and that is a critical point. You cannot define for us our consciousness.
You won't allow me to make my point.
You didn't come on the right road to do that. It's like you want to come into my house, but you're walking the sidewalk going the other way. Oh, I won't allow you to make your point. Okay, well, thank you for your call. Well, no, I want to unpack this just a little bit. Cecil, how close did he get to answering your questions?
Well, I just wanted him to define... couple of phrases he used, and as you suggested, and engage in some sort of meaningful conversation, which is difficult when we, and this is anyone, myself included, when we're so insistent that we are right, that we want our point to get across, and don't open up the moment for conversations. So as you suggested, Celeste, we're having this opportunity about this double consciousness that people face, that I'm speaking specifically from those of African descent face in the United States, and how that impact the way we live. So we'll continue this conversation with others. Let's go to
Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hang on a second. That was hilarious. That dude changed the trip. Holy cow. I think that kind of speaks a little bit to what you're saying about Juneteenth, because, you know, it's funny. I was privileged to be able to perform at the, with a band that I was a part of at the Juneteenth Festival in Vancouver. And somebody had wrote on the little walkway getting in there, says, you know, we all belong. And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, well, if we all belong, then Juneteenth wouldn't exist. So, like, and I think that's what, you know, this dude, because, you know, it's funny, because they never want to define socialism, you know. They can't, because socialism for them is like, it's a boogeyman, you know. It's like fundamentalists who try to, they can't tell you what witchcraft is, but you'll know it when you see it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So those dudes are hilarious. But, yeah, I mean, and just, you know, I'm Chicano, so, like, just take it, you know, what I say with a grain of salt, but I think it's recognizing that, like, you know, as a Chicano, like, I'm definitely not an American. Like, I live in America. Mm-hmm. I was educated in America, but everything around me tells me that I'm not an American. Mm. And, you know, and while we might be free on paper, you know, when we look at how, you know, we're constantly warehoused into small communities and just a handful of us get out to do stuff, yeah, I consider myself, I'm one of the lucky ones who gets to, you know, who isn't stuck in that, who isn't, you know, like, fiscally stuck in that kind of hamster, that, like, economic hamster wheel that many of my brothers and sisters are on. But, you know, but my experience is a very small percentage.
Right. I wonder if you could expand a little bit on that. I'm sure you're familiar with the talking points of people like Senator Tim Scott and former Governor Nikki Haley, who are, you know, running for president, who are people of color, who are saying that there is no systemic racism, that systemic oppression does not exist, and that if you're strong enough, you can be like people like Tim Scott or Nikki Haley or you, Santiago, and overcome and be a good American. How do you respond?
Well, first of all, I'm not a good American, but second of all, you know, it's the idea of excellence, you know, and, you know, like Latino excellence, Black excellence, you know, maybe in Nikki Haley's case, Indian excellence. You know, it's basically like it's cishet white capitalism in Black and brown face. It's the idea that because the system acquiesced to us somewhat, that somehow that systemic racism doesn't exist. You know, Tim Scott and Nikki Haley are anomalies. Now, if you look at Tim Scott, you listen to how the brother talks, you listen to Nikki Haley, how she talks. I mean, she doesn't even have her. I mean, look at Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz doesn't even have his whole actual real name, or Manchin, Senator Manchin. His last name isn't Manchin. It's some long Italian last name. These cats, you know, they have to change something about themselves in order to be accepted into the status quo. Whether you gotta have a white voice or a white sounding name or something that, you know, is like easy to pronounce or something, like, there can't be anything about you that betrays any sort of like exoticism. Hmm. You know, you have to conform.
Yes.
And that's really like a lot of what it is, you know, part of what being an American is just to, like, you know, they say it's a melting, you know, they want a melting pot, but, you know, it's not really, I don't even ascribe to that, but I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. It's like, it's the idea that capitalism has worked for my family as a person of color, so therefore it should work for everybody. But that's not the truth, you know. It's really just a statistics game. But the dudes who, you know, the elites that James was crying about, you know, those are the elites who are, you know, who are actively working against, you know, black and brown folks having any sort of power. And the ones that do have power, they have to come from a background that clearly serves, you know, that clearly serves capitalism or like neocolonialism. I mean, like Kamala Harris, for example, you know, people hold her up, but I mean, you know, as like this, you know, like black excellence, but she was jailing kids for truancy, you know? And, you know, and then she got up and started talking to, you know, my brothers and sisters who are trying to come across the border and say, don't come.
Yeah.
It's the audacity of it, really. I mean, you know, like we're free, you know, it's like one brother's shirt said, it's like, you know, free-ish since 1865.
I like that.
Like, it's freedom with an asterisk, you know, no substitutions, there may be, exceptions may apply.
Well, not just exceptions may apply. And, you know, it's more like freedom light, you know, L-I-T-E, well, which is one of those words that designates that this is not the complete structure or infrastructure or the actual essence thereof, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's the truth. And I think that's what people like James get upset about, is that, you know, Juneteenth causes them to question their paradigm. You know, I think there's a Charlie Kirk is one of like the spearhead of like the right. You know, he calls it like a summer competitor to July 4th. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, well, why do we have to have these? You know, it's like, oh, these people just want to be separatists. And it's like, no.
No, we don't want to be separatists. This is our reality, even now in 2023.
But that's the thing, is that these dudes don't live in reality. But, you know, America is a fairy tale to these guys. You know, when they read history, when they see the Constitution, they're not looking at the reality that surrounds it. It's just a comforting fairy tale for them that helps them go to sleep at night. But Juneteenth, you know, Chicano Day, Cinco de Mayo, you know, any sort of celebration that takes away from what they feel is the cohesion of America makes them uncomfortable, because then they have to start questioning. They have to question something they feel that in their mind should never be questioned.
Well, you know, furthermore, I want to take it to even another level. It's that when you say, I don't think you said the word homogenize. It was something you were using when you were talking about the dynamic bringing all of us together to be Americans. The thing is that their idea of what an American actually is almost antithetical to what anybody who was not born here brings to this melting pot. Because the ideal is reduction, but not keeping any of your essence. It's like you got to accept the American idea of culture. And the American idea of culture is also, as you said, a fairy tale. And that what are our cultural identity and our customs and our traditions, they do not really arise out of all of us together coming together and sharing a vision. It's kind of like you're given a one-size-fits-all uniform and you're expected to wear it, and then you're made fun of when it doesn't fit you properly.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is why I don't ascribe to being an American and saying that I was born on a, you know, the border, I didn't cross the border, the border crossed me. Mm-hmm. Is because, you know, we didn't, you know, we as Chicanos, like, we, the, you know, like, Chicano is basically made, like, all Chicanos are Mexican-American, but not all Mexican-Americans are Chicanos. It's a way of looking at it. As Ruben Salazar would say, you know, it's a Mexican-American who doesn't see himself through an Anglo lens. And when we stop viewing ourselves through the Anglo lens, then we stop becoming American, because that Anglo lens is exactly what makes us all American. You know, when we start, you know, like talking about that double consciousness, when we start actively trying to get rid of that white consciousness that's always bothering, you know, it's always bothering us, mm-hmm. and just focus on the like ancestral consciousness, you know, our black and brown consciousness, that's when we stop being an American, because we realize that, you know, it's just the white consciousness of our double consciousness is just a stumbling block. It's there to trip us up anytime we're doing anything good for ourselves, to make us think about how are Gertrude and, you know, how are Gertrude and, you know, Oliver going to feel about this, you know, like,
yes.
You know, forget them, you know, like they're the ones who are stepping on our toes and, you know, and making us try and put on these silly uniforms that don't even fit us. That's why I always tell, you know, on the Tuesday show, I tell them, you know, black and brown folks aren't Americans, and the sooner we figure that out, the better off we're going to be, because then we can stop thinking like we need to fit in here, you know, start doing something different and bigger, stuff that Fred Hampton was talking about, stuff that Huey Newton was talking about, stuff that, like Cesar Chavez and, maybe not so much Cesar Chavez, but like, you know, Corky Gonzalez and, you know, a bunch of other real revolutionary cats were talking about. Like, they didn't want war, but the idea of us breaking off and becoming our own nations and being self-determined people will bring that upon us, because they need us. They need a subservient class in order to make this system work. And when we assert ourselves when black folks assert themselves by celebrating Juneteenth, that's you saying, no, we are clearly our own people. And the people of colonial complexion can't handle that, because their fairy tale says we're all one people. But I mean, the justice system tells you different. The housing market tells you different. You know, I mean, just look at just one last thing. I was telling my brother the other day, was talking about, like, you ever watch like they have like this show on History Channel where they go through and they stop at random people's houses that have a bunch of accumulated junk. And they go through and buy stuff. It's like ancient, like, mm-hmm. architecture. Anyway, point is that on all those shows, I don't think they may have like one black person. And that's being generous. And you think about that, like, how is it that of all the places in the United States, they rarely come across a black person who has that much equity built up in a property that they can own it for several generations and be able to accumulate enough stuff to be able to sell to some random, you know, some random dude coming by. Like, wow. I don't know. I find that, like, you know, it's just those little things.
Yes.
It just dispels the myth right off the top of the head. And granted, it's probably not the most comprehensive information, but if you tell me, like, in 6 or 7 seasons, they might have found one black person to do that with. That tells you a lot about who has access to housing equity.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. James, while you raising some excellent points, I'm sorry, Santiago. Oh, I'm so sorry, Santiago.
That's okay.
given how the call didn't go with James, that was not a compliment. But thank you for your point. You brought some excellent points for us to consider. And thank you so much for getting the point and the spirit of the conversation. I appreciate that.
Yes. Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Uh-huh. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio. And our topic today, as Cecil has laid out, is discussing, you know, does Juneteenth reflect the African-American consciousness as a freedom day? And some of the conflicts that come with looking at it from that perspective. Internal conflicts and community conflict. And we heard an example of a community conflict, I think, with, yeah. You know, and once again, I'm going to try to illustrate this in the spirit of building a bridge and being an ambassador. It's like telling us how we ought to think and feel without addressing why we think and feel this way, and to tell me in such a fashion, in such a manner, that I'm wrong about the fact that I'm not included, without even listening to how we're saying we feel unincluded, is it's oppression.
Yeah.
I'm still processing that. So, you know, you brought up, I think, a really good point when you talked about vis-a-vis Du Bois, this dual consciousness. And in many ways, Santiago also kind of, explored that. And, you know, I'm not saying that we don't want to be whatever is full citizenship in these United States of America. I don't want to say we don't want that, but it's like it's not offered.
Well, it's what is offered is not what is. And
yeah.
So the mm-hmm. fact is, you know, in this article, and certainly this is a internal debate that's been going on for centuries. What does it mean to be a, I was going to say productive, but you know, for descendants of Africans, we've been productive since the first came over on the ship.
That's why we were brought.
That's right. Because you could produce. Well, okay, I got distracted. But the point, a point, is that we need to recognize that the tension within us. What does it mean to be a meaningful participant in this society, and when are we recognized for that? Are we other than? So the debate is, you know, be a true American. Well, what is a true American? It's certain ideology, or is it an ability to think differently?
Well, you know, even those are just two possible aspects.
Right, that's
you know,
right.
That doesn't even encompass the whole thing. Oh, and right. Maybe we need to think, I mean, you know, my big thing is the fact that we call ourselves Americans without realizing that there's two continents called America. Mm-hmm. So where is our locus of identity coming from?
And
you know,
certainly haven't even touch upon the indigenous population.
Well, so. Yeah, who are Americans as well. But, you know, and then if you really want to call us America, like who we are, our identity is the standard for identity worldwide. Well, then technically Mexicans are American. All of the indigenous populations in South America are American. So what exactly are you saying? You know, and that is that kind of amorphous, I can't even call it double speak, amorphous speak. I'll just make up this phrase, amorphous speak. It's purposely vague and ambiguous, so it allows inclusivity and exclusivity at the push of a button or flick of a switch. Well, you belong today, but you don't belong now.
And I might be a bit distracted now, but since you started me thinking about this name, you know, I just wonder what, you know, Mrs. Vespucci in, you know, 1498 said, "Oh, I'm going to have a son, he's going to be a merchant, he's going to go all over." And somehow that name is going to be associated with half the world. Mrs. Vespucci, thank you for naming your son a miracle.
Well, there you go. Okay. Anyway, we're not done, but we hope that you aren't either. We still have a little time. Join in the conversation. You know, I got so distracted by trying to get James to actually sit at our table instead of dragging us kicking and screaming to his plantation that I didn't talk about some of the other aspects that the commercialization of Juneteenth has on the spirit of Juneteenth. You know, and you and I joked about it when we talked about it, and I sent a link for a comedy sketch liking the commercialization of Juneteenth to, you know, Armageddon, more or less. It had become doom teeth, mm-hmm. you know, and it talked about things like how in the spirit of this so-called inclusivity and belonging that big box stores and commercial entities were offering us things like, you know, watermelon salad on Juneteenth, you know, so you don't have to make your own mm-hmm. or what is it? Juneteenth ice cream, Juneteenth T-shirts, Juneteenth fingernails.
That's right, special.
Yes. And it's like, that's missing the whole point. Oh, yeah, we giving those people what they want. No. You know, and if being commodified further and commercialized even more is becoming American, well, maybe in that aspect, they push the button and all of a sudden we're American. I'm not sure. You know, and you know, and that's why I was not so happy when it became a holiday. And I know a lot of people, you know, one of my best friend is from Texas, yes. you know, little town called Pampa. The point is that even though it was a desire to have it recognized by a lot of folks, it's the form of recognition that comes that really, I think, diminishes the significance of this.
It does. And, you know, again, you know, when I think of Juneteenth and I think of the spirit of the ancestors and the resistance and the struggle, I just want my Juneteenth to be a barbecue, have some Frankie Beverly Mays playing, and that's good enough for me. That's what I mean, celebrating family, community, and the ability to experience Black joy.
Yeah. Well. Oh, wait a minute. Black joy, is that separate from joy? Well, if we have no. Hey, I'm just, you know.
I said what I said.
All right. There it is. Anyway, since we got a little bit of a lull, I'm going to give the phone number again. And, like, where are the women at? I know we got opinions. I know we got thoughts on this. And I don't want to hear any disparaging comments about women and opinions, y'all. No, not today. It's Monday. I haven't had any caffeine. I don't need any. My point being, no, we just want some dialogue and some conversation. But what are the women at? 503-231-8187. I want to give a shout out to two Texans. You know, if you're listening, Latasha or Deshauna, you know, hey in Texas. I hope your Juneteenth was wonderful. You know, the first, where were you the first time you celebrated Juneteenth? Was it at home in New York?
No.
Where were you?
No, it's in Portland.
Really?
Because, you know, quite honestly, I never heard of Juneteenth until I moved to Portland. And, you know, what makes it so special was was the fact that it was something that generated from the community. So mm-hmm. many of us who remember Clara Peoples and how
yes.
she, for decades,
pushed
for Juneteenth and that celebration. And whenever I think of Juneteenth, I think of Mrs. Peoples and what she did for this community for decades.
Tireless work to get it recognized even by local government. And so I do want to give a shout out. We actually some years ago had one of her relatives on to talk about I think it was the first Juneteenth celebration in town. Mm-hmm. The first place I was in Juneteenth that celebrated Juneteenth, no, the first time I went to a Juneteenth celebration was actually in Anchorage, Alaska.
Mm.
And I'd never seen so many Black people in Alaska. I was thrilled.
Yeah.
And it was a traditional, you know, throwdown,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I'm really glad that people were able to attend. We do have another caller on. We got a few minutes. Let's see if we can squeeze in some conversation. Good morning, Francis. You're on air.
Hi. Well, thank you, Beverly and May. It's got me. I was just
You know, if you grew up within the black community, not only do you know Frankie Beverly, but the joke is that on each album, Frankie had maybe one or two songs that everybody liked. You know, but all you had to do was drop that song, and you had instant community, instant camaraderie.
Exactly. Yeah, and that. When my husband was in prison, he sent me a box of tapes that he had made.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like something like 90 tapes. And don't you know, that was just thrilling in itself. But one of the tapes I liked the best was Frankie Beverly and May's Live in New Orleans.
All right.
And there are several cuts on there that are very good. Speaking of my husband, I didn't know about June 19th. Until I married into his family,
mm-hmm.
and he was from Texas.
Okay.
So there was a celebration every year, and then I became aware of the history, and I think it's good that people do become aware of the history, but the part that keeps the theme always be missing is that we don't acknowledge the injustices that have taken place.
Mm-hmm.
Since the emancipation,
yes.
that continues today, and that duplicity, you know, in my husband's family, we celebrated freedom. However, in the larger society, that was not always allowed,
mm-hmm.
and it's not okay. We continue to pretend that we are a country of free people. To me, this country, what it means to be an American is that you can live your life in liberty and freedom and pursue your happiness however you choose. That's simple.
Until
everybody in this country is able to do that, without some kind of systematic racist nonsense going on, then we're not America, or what we pretend that it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does.
It does.
But I love Frank and Beverly and me.
Girl, put it on.
Yeah, take care.
All right, thank you for your call, Francis. I do have an announcement, and I probably should have done it at the beginning, but I totally forgot. And then we'll get to Ross really quickly. I wanted to invite people to a community meeting this Wednesday at 2808 Northeast MLK Boulevard. It's a Louisa event space. It goes from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. If you prefer not to attend in person, there is the opportunity for the hybrid meeting. And it's for the Portland Committee on Community Engaged Policing. It's a steering committee meeting. What is expected? We're going to talk about what have we done right, what have we done, what do you feel needs to be done in terms of enhancing the community relationship with Portland Police Bureau. This comes out of the settlement agreement that the DOJ, Department of Justice, launched against the Portland Police Bureau for its abysmal treatment of people with mental health issues and also, you know, people of color. And so we're having a community meeting to help us shape our agenda for the coming year. If you can, be there. If you have questions about how to log on to the internet and Zoom portion of the meeting, you can call 503-823-4000. So this takes place this Wednesday, June 28th. 6 to 8:30 p.m., 2808 Northeast MLK Boulevard. You will have to find parking on the street, but we hope you attend. Now, let's take the next few minutes and talk to Ross really quickly. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Well, I appreciate your taking my call in these minutes we got left. Listen, I'm calling, and the main reason I know about Juneteenth is Well, I first learned about it, of course, getting to know
pair of peoples than folks over at the Bethel Church. And no, I had the joy of being married for 17 years to a woman from Texas, a black woman from Texas, who was born in 1925. And she was a great storyteller, but she always had stories about Juneteenth. And the Juneteenth is very much like the Juneteenth that Cecil is kind of wanting a kickback, and the day of getting in your backyard, and it's a day you don't have to do nothing. But it's a day of eating and community celebration. And then the interesting thing, Annie was raised by people who had a little, they had a boarding home, and they always had food because they live out in the country. And but Juneteenth was a place where everybody who had a backyard and a grill would be cooking. And guess what?
What?
Everybody went there. So the white people in the neighborhood were always looking for some black people's home that they come in and say, there's food over there.
All right, building community.
Let's go to some black person's home. We're going to find some good food.
All right.
They did. They were always welcome.
Well, thank you, Ross. And so the spirit of Juneteenth is for the freedom to relax, not to have to work. Thank you for listening. This is KBOO FM, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Old Mo Variety Hour.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Listener-supported community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. Masks and proof of vaccination are required at this time. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm.